Hi, this is James Altucher. Thank you for listening to Eric Cabral's Entrepreneur Circle.
On this episode,
for our spiritual journey, like, we shouldn't fast forward through this. The next big lesson you have to learn as a father, as a husband, like, don't wish those away. Enjoy them, because the journey is beautiful. The journey is what draws you closer to God. It's not about this destination. God doesn't need you to save the world. He does not need you to bring love to the world. He's already taken care of that. He doesn't need me to bring money to these organizations. He's got that covered. He wants you in this journey.
You have now entered the Entrepreneur Circle.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here, because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at On Air Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I am your most happy and humble host as usual, Eric Cabral. And with me today is a special day for me. I say this because the person that I'm going to introduce you to really pulls on my heartstrings. Before we even started the episode, I was already about to break down in tears. That may or may not happen to you, but I just want to let you know, fair warning that this will get emotional, not necessarily because of the other better looking Eric in the room, but because of me and my state of mind and my growth as an individual. This man here is going to have a lot to peel back in terms of his journey as well. But before I kick it off and introduce you to the folks, welcome to the show, Eric Scovel.
Eric, I'm so pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, brother. It's always good to spend time with you. I truly don't do it enough. We gotta schedule some time so we hang out.
No kidding.
Once a week. Here's what I want to share so that people who don't know, Eric is a Christ-serving family office style financial planner with a suite of top tier alternative investments. For anyone out there who is an investor, we'll talk a bit about what he does there in terms of hedge funds, real estates, royalties, world-changing venture capitalist opportunities as well. That's what we see from the outside, but what I know from the inside and my personal connection with Eric here is he's a former hockey player. He was in his faith as I at a young age, and then we kind of lost our way, and he had to find his way back to Christ and faith, and that's what we were getting emotional about. Just spoiler alert earlier, but he, in terms of his core values, from what I understand and know of him, he's a faith guy, he's a love guy, he's a family guy. He's got loads of humility and gratitude and appreciation for everything that he's experienced in life. But again, brother, welcome to the show. I'm so eager to get into it with you.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm excited for this conversation.
I hope I nailed it. I kind of winged it there, but this is what I know of you, man, and this is what I love of you. So let's get into it. The first question of the day for you on the show is your eureka moment that caused you to make a major pivot in life or business.
Okay. Yeah. So from a eureka moment, there's been a couple of these. I would say that the biggest one that's driven where I'm at now is I had been in construction, thought I had everything mapped out in front of me, and the company I was with had been grooming me to take over as CEO at a pretty young age, and then all of a sudden, my financial advisor, I had been working with him on why I felt like I was going to take a jump and go the opposite direction, and so everything was laid out in front of me. Take over CEO. I was 29 years old. Take over CEO of this company, this great company that I loved. I'd been there for 7 years in an industry I loved, and start think of the philanthropic impact I could have of a great company with a 55 employees at that point. And I could make a major impact. And I felt like God was leading me out of that. And it's just this, that eureka moment there was on my deathbed, I will not care what title I hold. And to that point, I had never thought of owning my own business. I literally told the owner at that time that I never want to own my own business. I always want to be someone else's right-hand man. But I had this thought of on my deathbed, I will not care what title I held. I'm going to care about, not that many people are really great dads. Like, I want to be an awesome dad. And that takes time. And my hierarchy goes God, spouse, kids. And so if I'm going to take the time to be a really great dad, I need to take the time to be a really great husband. And I need to take the time to, I hesitate to say be a great child of God's, but to be the best child of God's that I can be and lean into that. And so I need time there, and I love giving money away. And since this is an entrepreneurial podcast, like I kind of don't say that as much to people who are in the normal W-2 space, but in this case, like, I can go get a job that pays me a lot of money, and I can go get a job that I get a lot of free time. But hard to have both unless you run your own business. So I felt like I was being led into the entrepreneur world from that moment. My financial advisor wound up telling me, listening to my business plans that I had, and he's like, you need to do what I'm doing. I said, no way. Like, I've been to Morgan Stanley office. Like, I see them stare at CNBC all day long. It looks miserable. Like, I don't want to do that. He's like, that's stock picking. You need to be a financial advisor and do what I'm doing. So that was one of those big ones when God's like, it's not about the title. It's about the quality of time, what you do with it. And so that was that major one. If you look at the defining moments to drive me from W-2 staying safe on the sidelines and someone else's umbrella and going out and starting my own.
Yeah, it's such a major pivot and transition from a mental and I'll throw in spiritual state of mind. So I'm gonna use a quote here that's gonna be a little more relevant here because we're gonna talk about this a little bit later, folks. But the two most addicting things in life, from my understanding, is number one, heroin, and number two, a weekly salary. And to walk away from at least what most of us experience in daily life is the weekly salary, the comfortability, the predictability. What was your situation at the time? How many children did you have? Were you married?
So I was fresh off the previous largest leap of faith that I had made. I went to school for construction management, which meant I knew how to is kind of that I use that loosely. I was trained to help run the construction of big skyscrapers. I had worked on a couple of different $250 million projects. That's what I was trained to do. Myself, I had built a chicken coop. It's still standing, but poorly. Tons of water gets in there regularly, and I had done
as long as they don't drown.
Right, I had done an addition to my dad's garage, which structurally looks fine unless you look at the concrete and see the disaster that was. And there's no way to fix that one. That's all I had done. And I decided to build my own house.
Wow.
And so we built our house. And when I say built, like, now I had a carpenter who helped guide the way. And I was his laborer for some of the stuff. But we ran that project. We did a ton of it ourselves. And so I had just done it. So obviously it was a cheaper way to construct a house, but we didn't, like, our starter home was a, you know, nearly 4,000 square foot house. Like it was not the normal project. And so the situation when I made the leap was I had a 6-month old daughter, and I had at the time I made the decision was 3 months. I had a 3-month old daughter, and I had a substantial mortgage on a new house there with my wife. Also, us both deciding that we think she's going to stay home. She's going to stay home. She had gone back to work briefly, and we just decided, you know what? I feel like there's a better way for us to do this. Let's not do the normal 2-income thing. Let's have you stay home. So she decided to stay home. I had a big mortgage, brand new child, and we decided to take that massive leap of faith and shut off my income completely.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about the financial situation for anyone out there who's in the position where, you know, when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change? That I experienced, and we had to, we'll see how much savings, I call it runway, which will last us a couple of years. What was your financial situation to make that, to help you make that decision?
So, full transparency, we had low 6 figures. So, I mean, I'm talking maybe 125 grand or so that we had saved up between non-qualified accounts and qualified accounts. And that was it. So we had that, but we had been, you know, we had been doing a good job with the salaries we had of not letting our expenses run too wild. And, and so controlling costs there, and we had been saving, doing the 15% thing. And now here we were, you know, so we were about to shut all that off. And you can go into financial advising. The normal way is you go to some big wirehouse and they'll pay you a $50,000 salary. You own all of the, they own all of your clients. And so at that standpoint, if you leave, then they own all that. I didn't want that. I knew I wanted to kind of have my book of business and not have someone trust me and then get sold off if I decided I didn't want to stay with that firm, or I thought I was going to be moving states. And so, you know, as most people do who live in Illinois, and so at that point, I chose the no salary route, no income, and start complete from scratch when I get into financial advising, which has a 87% failure rate to begin with. Yeah. And the people who do, like, you have to sleazily beg every person you've ever met to come in for a meeting. And I decided I'm not doing that either. So if God was leading me into this, I was going to rely on him. So I never asked a single person to come in for a meeting. I don't think, I mean, I'm sorry if someone's listening that I actually did, but for the most part, never asked a single person to come in for a meeting. I just spent more time in relationships. I went out and did lunch with more people, you know, people that I knew and liked and just hadn't engaged with in a long time. So I was too busy in my own self-centeredness. So I did that. I did pick up a side job. I started painting. And so I went from being the director of the entire construction of this large, you know, high-end remodeling company to being a painter. And I made more money painting than I did running the entire construction division for that period. So God provided during that time. Yeah, like considerably more money. So all I did all day long was I'd paint and I'd study. I just take in spiritual podcasts and then financial, and just back and forth all day long, kind of keep my mind fresh air. And I just took in content for months while I was studying and letting, you know, meetings begin to pop up. And so we did that. But once when I finally turned off the income from painting and leaned in full time into the financial advising, that's when we saw our assets continue to decline. And so I kept pouring into the business, and it's a slow grind into that business. And so we went through the assets we had. We eventually sold the house that we had because I built this, so we had sweat equity in it. So we sold that, moved into a house about a third of the size and a third of the price. And we went through that income was starting to build up some, but I kept feeling like I was supposed to lean into this, lean in on coaching, lean in on other opportunities to grow my relationships, grow my skill set. And so kept reinvesting back into the business. And so to this day, we still, outside of our fixed expenses, like my wife still, we're on a $3,000 a month budget. My income has dramatically increased, but we have, and so basically we got down to the very last $10,000 that we had through this. And I had a full transparency. I had one of the uglier moments in my like actually saved portion of my life. New Year's Day, 2022. 2022, New Year's Day. I'm out changing the oil on my truck and it's very cold outside. My truck won't fit inside my garage because the garage is too small in this little transitional house that we have. My family's inside. I should be inside with them, but trying to conserve all the money we have to keep leaning in on where I feel like God's leading. And I bust my knuckle, can't get the oil filter off, and I throw down my wrench and I cuss at God. Will you please send me some beep money? Mm-hmm. It took me 3 seconds to hit my knees and complete, like, just as apologetic and repentant as I could possibly be. And just, you know, how ungrateful and how, impatient I was being with that. But I mean, it got to a low point here with all that. And it was like that June of the following year when we got down to the last 10 grand that we had to our name completely. And when that happened after that, that's when things took off. And that's when things took off. Like all of a sudden you start landing one big client, next big client, next big client, next big client. And now our income has skyrocketed since then. But only out of like when God got me to a point where I was, and my heart was with him the whole time with this. I was trying to do this for him, but he still had plenty of things to, and he still does have things to break off of me.
Yeah. It's interesting. The journey, dude. I'm relating to this very much. It's wild, the entrepreneurial journey. You can read as many books as you want, and you can watch as many social influencers pounding their chests and how great and all the successes that they're having. But nobody talks about this stuff, right? The dirty reality of spending all of your reserves, the stress that it puts on your family. How do we as providers stay mentally, spiritually healthy? What are some of the things that you were doing to kind of like, you know, keep on top of it so that you could be the best, you know, and most present father that you and husband that you could be?
All right. Great question. And I guess to bring light to that, we were down to our last 10 grand and we had $30,000 a month of expenses.
It so ballooned it wasn't from like, 3K to 30.
Well, 3K personally.
Personally, okay, but
30K business. For the businesses with like the cost of running the hedge fund, the cost of these other businesses and everything else. So
yeah,
it was a tough situation. Through it, like, and you had to go in from the beginning, like the foundation had to be set. And and obviously the foundation has continued to be expanded upon. Cracks have been revealed. But I have just leaned in on my faith completely with this, trusting God. And I had been starting journaling, started journaling a little bit before that, but the reality was I'm gonna kind of keep a log of just how I'm doing. My journal sometimes is my prayers, sometimes it's me just being honest with how I'm doing with all of this, and constantly asking God to help me to. So my career is talking about finances. I spend a lot of time talking about, you know, focus on finances for my clients and running a business. Every entrepreneur knows that you need to put a lot of time into that. And then obviously on the personal side, like you get home and I want to engage with my wife and kids, but there's still this massive financial, you know, cloud looming over at that point too. So I told my wife I want to keep her off the roller coaster. Because I mean, I'd be looking at deals. I'd have a conversation with someone like, well, that conversation right there, you know, talking with the CEO, CFO of this organization, they say, yes, they're on board. I mean, that's $1 million plus income to me as that happens. And so I just like, I want to keep her off the roller coaster with that because she's feeling the tighter and tighter strain of do not spend like that $3,000 a month. Like, don't spend that. So bare bones minimum, what do we need? But I had to have her as a rock with this. I had to have times where I could be vulnerable with her. She needed me to be strong for the most time, but then she needed to also be able to pick me up and to be my rock when I needed that as well. But man, that's a lot of trade, a lot of just studying more, you know, looking at the truths of the Bible, not from a standpoint of like, how do I speak this into existence? You know, just from a selfish standpoint, but just like, God, you're doing work in me. The stuff that is in the Bible is not like now and then 2 months from now, everything's great. You know, tough now, 2 months from now, everything's great. Like in the Bible, it's kind of, it's hard because those are like, that might be 40 years or 80 years, you know, until these things come to pass. So just help me to keep learning lessons the easy way as much as possible. And when I need to learn a lesson the hard way, I just want to lean into that now and not drag that out.
Yeah.
If you need me to drag it out, if I need to learn more patience, then I'll learn more patience, but help me to just keep leaning in and keep doing your work in me. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Because you don't care. And I there was one other really key thing with this that I think is important to share. When I first made that decision to make the jump. So I have company I love and career that I love with the people that I love saying, you should be our leader. You should be CEO. And it wasn't quite there. They're saying, hey, we're ready to groom you for that. I had been promoted many times in this organization. And there's that, which seems strictly from God. And then there's other career that I know very little about. I'm pretty ignorant in and has a very low success rate. You know, there's just all the knocks against it. And so I basically decided that if I missed God, not by a mile, but missed him by 10 miles. And not only me, because it's easy for me to kind of talk about myself, but my wife and my baby girl die under a bridge due to starvation. We have blown through all of our savings. We've blown through all the help that any family members would give. We have wore out our welcome in every homeless shelter in the area. And we die under a bridge due to starvation. If we believe what we believe, then we get to the party early. Right? Like, so, you know, God might say there when we get there, like, hey, dummy, like I offered you, you know, running this company that you love, like everything, like, and all the influence, everything that you could have wanted, like I had that for you. And you went, like, you didn't just go to left field, like you went way gone, but at least you tried, come on in. Right. Like, so it's just like, it took away some of the fear behind this, of fear of failure. And so I love how you lean in on the failure piece. And so like, I'm going to fail. And if I fail with some stuff, that's okay. Mm. Our hedge fund is, you know, struggling. But like, if I failed, but I'm trying my best to lean into what God's asking me to do, and I'm not just, you know, I'm taking time to be prayerful and actually listen, and I still miss them, then I tried.
So, whew, that's great stuff. Yeah, thanks for sharing, dude. It's a question that I have often, because as I mentioned earlier, before we turn the cameras on, you know, finding my faith and having a very closer, getting every day, you know, closer to God and closer to my relationship with Jesus. And I want to know what you do in terms of filtering what's your thoughts and ideas versus what's a message, right? Because sometimes it all feels like a message and a direction, and you're like, how do you know?
So I've got some friends who know, and they know, they feel like they clearly hear from the Lord. I rarely feel like I hear the voice of God. I have heard the audible voice of God one time in my life, and that was when I took it to a day. One of my mentors had recommended taking a, I forget what he called it. I call it wilderness days. Basically, a day where kind of like where Jesus would go out to the wilderness. I go out, and it's meant to be a no tech day. Just I'm just there. I've got my Bible, my journal, and you know, some worship music, and that's it. And I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna fast, and I'm just going to listen. And at one point during one of those days, I heard, I am here. It was as I was reflecting on this. And it was in my own voice, but it was so clearly not me saying that, that I felt like that was it. And that was, man, that was powerful. I am here. That's all I heard. I have had quite a few other instances where I felt like God has clearly answered prayers, some very powerful ones. But often for me, it's this piece of the Bible talks about letting the peace of your heart guide you. And that you got to be careful with this, because those spots where like the heart, you know, out of the heart comes the wickedness of men. And like, there's all sorts of other problems with just kind of trusting your gut in a sense. But it says like that the piece of your heart will guide you. And the word kind of means umpire. And so the piece of heart will rule you. And so as I get quiet and prayerful, and I have leaned into this, full disclosure, I'm one of those crazy people, like I'll speak in tongues sometimes at this, but I will just lean in and I'm trying to hear from the word, from the Lord more. And sometimes I might be in the word that something comes to life. But often it's like I'll have this hunch that I'm supposed to do something. Mm-hmm. Yesterday morning, I had a hunch about a person that I was going to be meeting with someone else. And I felt this. I was on a walk. So I sometimes go for walks in the mornings just to try to hear from the Lord and just to make myself more aware with him and trying to do what Jesus did when he'd go on walks in the wilderness. And so I'm out on a walk. I have this thing come to me. This is like instant little thought downloaded to me. I'll just jump on that neck. I am naturally like, I'll just act on something immediately. And I say, no. Let me stop and slow down and try to listen. Holy Spirit, was that from you? Help me to understand more. And I try to clear out all the thoughts out of my head and just let this be Holy Spirit. Let me listen to you. Is that you? And I tried that a little bit, never heard anything, never had any more peace about it in my heart or anything else. And then yesterday afternoon when I was with the person that the thought was about, I just told him, I said, man, I had this thought. It came to me and I had forgotten about it as well, to be honest. And it came back to my memory. And so I said, I'm just going to act on this. I'm going to tell you this. I was trying to listen to the Holy Spirit more and to see if he confirmed anything. I didn't get anything, but I'm just telling you anyways. I have adopted a screw it, I'm in kind of approach to things. If we get into some of the stuff that we're doing from a business standpoint, there are so many of these things that we're doing they're out there. Like just there's like no one from, you know, the Midwest, you know, some simple contractor, you know, from the Midwest whose parents weren't senators or something, like people like me don't get into the stuff that we're doing. And it's foreign territory to me almost daily. I'll lean into something, I'll pray about it. And if I don't get anything, but my peace says go, kind of what you said, you've got more peace about going into the unknown than I do about staying in the known, then screw it, I'm in. Is once I've, you know, not, that's not, I don't rush into that, but that's eventually the spot I get to where it's just, I would rather, you know, there's this reckless abandon for the kingdom. I would rather put it on the line for God and try to live out what he's doing. Because if he's calling me into anything that would be noteworthy from a biblical standpoint, like it's going to be dramatic and it's going to be way bigger than me. I'm going to have to take massive leaps of faith. And I don't even think I'm doing that right now. I think I'm like just preparing. Like I'm just training my leap of faith muscles, you know, for later.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't expecting an exact answer. I've heard other people mention they're and I can't recall what those are, in terms of how they can differentiate, you know, a message, you know, that's clearly from God versus their own thoughts, you know, or desires. But I did have a question around when you're making a decision that you think is aligned with the mission. Mm-hmm. So personally, you know, I got a message during one of those moments. I was in my home though; I wasn't out in the woods. But it was to make the world better one mic at a time. And I was like, oh wow, this completely fully aligns with what my company's doing. So that's the mission. But there are times, especially of late, where I'm like, is that the mission or is this like a stepping stone to another thing? You know, so when my question for you is when you're building towards all these things that you said that these are opportunities that normally you wouldn't have these opportunities and you start to dive into the nuts and bolts and building and creating that, maybe it's too soon to tell, but is there any experience that you've had where you're like, you start to question, okay, I was on the mission, but the mission has now changed?
Absolutely. Where it started was business. It was business and it was about me making more time for my family, for my children, my wife, God, and to make more money. It turns into, I want to help more people in business because so many people, the financial industry is full of wolves. It is brutally corrupt, brutally misleading. And it's just And most people don't understand it. They put all this effort into making money, but very little effort into understanding their money. And so I thought I can help a lot of people there with money. And if I can help a lot of people with money, then I can help a lot of people get into philanthropy and stewardship. Stewardship's this big thing for me, because stewardship when you understand steward, like, we are a steward of God's assets, not our own. You know, I'm not giving him my stuff. I'm just giving back to God what he's given me. When you shift that paradigm, then, like, you know, that's a major breakthrough, major impact for people. It kind of evolved into that. Then it evolved into, like, I want to make this money because I want to give a lot of money away. The two things that are most important to me are discipleship making, kind of, you know, the Great Commission, what Jesus said, you know, go and make disciples and spread the gospel. And then sex trafficking. And so, you know, helping get more, and human trafficking, you know, applies not just sex trafficking, but if I'm honest, like, especially being the dad of little girls, like, the sex trafficking piece is even bigger. And full disclosure, I had a massive porn problem before. And so, like, I've seen just that whole industry I've been more exposed to. And so helping get more people out of that and getting into freedom, like in Christ, not just physical freedom, but spiritual freedom that comes from that, that's where my heart goes. So I want to give a bunch of money away. And so then I, you know, kind of get a little frustrated with God when, why am I not making more money? Because you've given me the steward's heart. I want to go fund these causes that are near and dear to you. You know, I know that you care about those kids. And so I want to fund those causes. Mm-hmm. Another eureka moment. At one of those times, it was like, I don't need you to save the world. I'm trying to do this. Like, I'm trying to go save the world. And I don't need you to save the world. My son did that. He's taking care of that. So what these things are, like, these things are good. It is good that you want to spend time with your family. It's good that you want to, you know, help people in your work. It's good that you want to use the money that you make to go and do these other things to further the kingdom. But as a parent, if God's a perfect father, what does he want more than my service? He wants me. He wants my heart. He wants relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's like, before you do all the other stuff, I want you. So if he needs to break me of these financial issues, you know, these other, or, you know, wounds that I've had, or, you know, lies that I've carried around, whatever he needs to do to break those and get me back to where it's about him. Mm-hmm. So the vision has evolved into that. And now it's kind of coming back down the other way. So it's gotten back to, like, it's about this vertical relationship between me and him first. Then I go out and try to, you know, use the blessings that he's given me to make the impact. And, you know, I've got orphanages I work with, and got, you know, church planners I work with, and, you know, doing, you know, starting to get it a little bit more into the human trafficking, the anti-human trafficking, work there. And, you know, certainly with my clients, like, getting more of them philanthropically involved and reshaping my schedule to not be driven by, like, more sales, more money, and other stuff, and leaning back in on my family again. So it's like it evolved up the ladder, and now it's coming back down, and, like, those things are just kind of tying together in a much more synergistic way now.
So good, dude. I love it. I'm relating to every word of your story. It's pretty wild, the timing of this.
That's Holy Spirit.
Yeah, exactly. And you reaching out to me to make this connection and have us have this conversation, right, kind of the last minute, is all for reason. I do have the question, and we're going deep here. We're about
nothing's off limits. I just talked about my porn problem, so yeah, nothing's off limits.
And there was a recent, and I relate to that as well, dude. All my life, you know, growing up Catholic and being ashamed of that, and don't touch yourself, oh, yeah, you know, you'll go blind, whatever it was, and then accepting it, you know, listening to Howard Stern as I was growing up, it's like, no, this is okay. Right. Everybody touches themselves, to, like you said, bouts of addiction. And then I realized somewhat recently through another friend and devout Christian, he was like, dude, you know that, like, porn is a hub for, like, sex trafficking. Like, that is the industry. I was like, what? Right. Like, I never connected the two. And then, you know, but anyway, thanks for sharing that, because maybe there's someone listening that doesn't realize that as well. It's just supporting that industry and supporting what's happening. But my question, as we've been talking for the last probably 15 minutes at least about a faith and God and Jesus, I personally, if I had heard this a year to 2 years ago, would have probably turned the episode off. And for, thank you for anyone who's been here for this long, because this is something that Eric and I, the Erics here, are very passionate about. And I'm hoping that you get something out of it. But why do you think that versions of us that would have turned this off, and people who currently may have turned this off because we said Jesus too many times, why is that? Like, why does it feel like there is a movement? Maybe where I'm in a little bubble, you know, the people who are all diving into The Chosen and watching that show and binging and right. finding their faith through that, which is fabulous. I being one of them. But why is it that majority of people, if you say Jesus too many times in a sentence in a certain amount of time, they just turn off? How do we get beyond that?
I have, when I was growing up, so but came from a broken home. Parents were both good people. Some bad mistakes. And, you know, it certainly kind of wrecked a lot of the family that, you know, the family design that God had got blown up for us. My dad, having been changed, saved, and turned his life around, he would always have Christian music on when I come over, always on the radio. And every time I'd come over, the first thing I would do is I would go to the radio station and turn it off. Mm-hmm. I would go to the radio and turn it off every single time I'd go to his house. Mm-hmm. And I remember even one time making the comment, "Will you turn that noise off?"
Mm. How old were you?
I was, mind you, I was in Catholic school and still, you know, I would absolutely consider myself a Christian, but I'd rather listen to rap about whatever content you want to put inside rap or, you know, a later version of me. I'd rather listen to country music about, you know, going and getting drunk and doing all the stupid, mm-hmm. stupid other things. So it wasn't until the Holy Spirit worked in me, and the worst thing that ever happened to me wound up being the best thing that ever happened to me, and it changed everything for me. It was a complete heart shift that I could not have done on my own. No church could have done for me. You know, it was the Holy Spirit worked in me. And, you know, the Bible says that too. And I never dug into the Bible. You know, I had read the New Testament one time, I think, in my earlier years. But as the Holy Spirit did his work in me, and my heart became sensitive to these things, I embraced humility. I asked, you know, these things like, I want that. I want you to do a new work in me. I want to be better. I don't want this anymore. I don't want to get drunk and not remember what I did and worry about, you know, how I may have hurt the people that I care most about the night before. I had these deeply honest prayers, like, I want to be a better man than this. And through that, it caused change. But there's a new song out right now that, if you miss the old me, is the Zach Williams song. Don't remember the words exactly here, but basically, you know, if you miss the old me, you know, blame Jesus. That's Jesus's fault. I was on a bachelor party two, three years ago with some people who I was very close to. You know, go back 5, 6 years, I was very close to these men. And it felt like it was like every single sentence spoken at that bachelor party either included something, you know, some F-bomb, something about, you know, Jesus Christ was used derogatory. Or, you know, I was like, you know, God, you know, was used derogatory almost every single sentence out of those guys' mouths. And I couldn't believe, like, how, like, you're talking about what burgers we're going to make and you're still throwing those in. Like, how are you, like, how is it that vulgar? And like, hearts have become so calloused and just so insensitized to it. And the, like, when you look around, and obviously even people who are not saved Christians are seeing the world, like, the world's getting pretty nutty. Mm-hmm. And like, when we become, you know, desensitized to the these things, like, it causes us to hear things like the word Jesus. And if it's not used in a derogatory sense, then outside of that, it's like, it kind of turns me off. And even when I was earlier in my walk with Jesus, I still, like, saying the word Jesus still, it felt weird. Mm. Like, I could say God pretty comfortably, but saying the word Jesus just, it carried so much more weight than me saying the word God. And maybe it's just because, you know, it's not normal. I know, but like, I think there's, now I fully believe that there is power in that name. Mm. I've seen it. I have seen There's power in that name, but it carries weight that I was so uncomfortable saying the word Jesus when I would be having a faith conversation with someone else receptive to it. Mm. And so I think there is a power with that, and spiritually, like I think to get the real answer of what you're asking, I think there's spiritual power in that that's trying to push against us for that. That's trying to drive people like, I heard the Jesus. Oh, it's just one of those more Jesus people. Mm-hmm. Partially because Christians are falling all over themselves and being hypocrites, and the church is a gigantic mess, and people are, pride has ruined. Pride and humanity have ruined the Christian message for the most part. There's very few people who didn't grow up in a religious system that weren't pushed away in their teenage years because they, like, how are priests having sex with little boys? Mm. How are the hypocrites doing this? I got beat up at church camp. I didn't, like, all these other things. Like, the church is not being what the church is supposed to be. Mm. Then you read the New Testament, you read Acts of Apostles, like, here's what the church is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Church is not that today. Like, you don't see any of that in the church today.
Yeah.
And so because the church isn't being what the church is supposed to be, it's causing a lot of people who are on the fringe to go the other way rather than being drawn in. The church should be ringing the dinner bell. Jesus healed people, cast out demons to ring the dinner bell to bring people in. Then he preached to them. Mm-hmm. Like, the church isn't, we're not doing that. Like, we're not attracting people in. We're pushing people out if they look too closely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that answer. It's definitely stained its reputation in our lifetime, you and I being a little bit older. Yeah. For those new, maybe the Gen Zs, they weren't around during the time when, especially the Roman Catholic Church, was all over the news. And, I forget which comedian said it. It was looked at as like a witness protection program, like just moving them around, to cover it up. But I also think, to answer my own question, where I go, Eric, is fear, that I will see the light, or you will convert me, or I'll change. I don't want to change.
Okay, yeah.
I like this life. I liked flipping burgers and dropping F-bombs and G-bombs and doing all the stuff versus actually putting the work in, because it's work.
It is work.
Isn't it? and undeniable vulnerability and faith that it will work.
Yeah.
So
I loved my old lifestyle. I mean, in hockey, like, picture a 19-year-old who's going to go live out in Boston playing hockey. And, I'm living in an apartment away from everybody. Like, I don't know one there. No one there knows me. Like, I can do whatever I want, whenever I want. We are in something that's attractive to that culture out there. Mm-hmm. Like, it was as it's just debauchery. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was empty, completely empty. And I needed a better fill the next time, like how most addictions go. And yeah, man, it's just, but it seemed great. I'd come home and share the stories with such pride. I was so cocky and just share these stories. Like, look how much better my life is than you. I got to go do this. Like, when the reality is, like, man, listening to those people talk now, it's like my heart breaks for them because they don't know. Until they hit their knees in submission and humility, they're going to keep doing the same thing.
Yeah. And I think that's the aversion. That's the fear of hearing the word Jesus. Like you said, God can be used because it's more universal. It's all different religions, but it's very specific to Christianity and what Jesus did. And one of the things, because my wife and I had these conversations as I've been finding more and more of a relationship with Jesus, is that... Was he real? Was it a legend? Was it campfire stories? And as I started to peel the layers back, I was like, whoa, there's like insane amounts of evidence. And I'm not going to get into it here, but if you could look it up, that no other prophet has ever accomplished that he has. It's crazy in terms of the miracles and in terms of, having others perform miracles. It's just pretty wild, dude, that people still to this day will question or deny just because they haven't looked into it. If you look into it and you do the proper due diligence, then you'll discover that it was all true. There wouldn't be millions and millions of people
that believe in and know him. And his name is in other books. You know, he's in the Torah. Yeah. He's in the Quran. I mean, whereas other prophets aren't mentioned in in these scriptures, which is that's a big one to me. It's like he was mentioned every single book.
So I'm listening to or one of the churches I love listening to. So I live in Illinois, but one of the churches I love is the Church of 1122 in Jacksonville, Florida. And the main preachers, I mean, he is phenomenal, especially to someone like me, like a little bit rougher. I'm like that. I completely align with that guy.
What's his name?
You know, one of his name is Joby Martin. So J-O-B-Y, Joby Martin, Church of 1122. They are phenomenal. He's a little bit of a redneck. He's, but man, he brings the word with power, and he's funny and it's engaging. And there's no one of like the type of people that I would, you know, relate with. There's none of them who aren't, no matter how far away they are from God, that wouldn't listen to that guy. I'm like, yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And be able to listen to it again, even though they would not consider themselves Christians. But his associate pastor, last couple of weeks has been preaching, and he's been in the book of James, being the half brother of Jesus, and talked about like, if you want to understand a little bit of, you know, case for Jesus here, apologetics, James did not believe that Jesus, his half brother, was the Son of God. Mm-hmm. All through it, like, and you know, the Bible talks about it multiple times where, you know, they're not supporting him in any way. They saw Jesus and you know, in his, you know, like they knew how much he smelled. They knew, like they knew his mom. Like they knew that he, like, how could that be the Son of God? But after James sees Jesus die, and he saw him die, and sees him resurrected, all of a sudden James commits his life to this. Like there's a strong case, and is willing to die for it. Like, and when you look at Babylon Bee, did this awesome video here not that long ago, about this, and they say, like, you know, the greatest prank of all time, and it's these guys standing around the campfire pretending to be the apostles, mm-hmm. and saying, "I got a great idea. Let's pretend Jesus died, and he rose again.
Yes, I saw this.
And we'll tell everyone, and then we die, and then we all get brutally murdered. We get and like when you look at how many people just absolutely laid it all on the line for that. Like, well, that's also add that to another, you know, piece on the case for Christ compared to the case against, and just that evidence starts to pile up.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Since you're getting into it, and thank you anyone who's sticking in with us for this, because this is really, really important. It's probably the most important thing that we've ever discussed on my show over 4 years.
All right.
because I wasn't this person yet. So the Sermon on the Mount, right? Or even the hundreds and hundreds of people that saw him after he rose and he spoke to them. If that ever happened today, and people witnessed that and experienced that and saw someone come back to life, of course you would stand by that. Like, even though people were persecuting you and taking away your family, your finances, doing whatever to destroy you and to prevent you from explaining what you've seen and preaching what you've seen, why would they do that? That Babylon Bee skit is funny because that is one of the things that I've noticed on YouTube. I forget which channel it was. I'd love to give it a shout out, but it's like people were persecuted. They were not revered. You know, they were destroyed. No, they were outcasts. Killed. They were outcasts. Exactly. So why would you be so adamant to continue preaching this word if it didn't happen, if you didn't experience it, if it wasn't true? It's pretty wild.
Yeah. You get these. As you lean into the faith more, my grandfather, who's the one who, when I was going through that worst moment that became the best, and he kind of put his arm around me and said, you know, come here, little boy, the world's not what you think it is. We joke about coincidences, and these coincidences being these things that just kind of keep happening, and they're really kind of difficult to explain, but you know, you just got these things that keep coming up, and they started with, you know, one coincidence, then another, then another, then another. It started to be like, you know, like it just eventually, like I often refer to this as a tree. When I was a brand new Christian, I was a seedling. Someone could have come by and plucked me up. You know, doesn't take much for my 3-year-old daughter could pluck out a seedling, pull a seedling out of the ground. Eventually, as more things happen, more, my faith gets deeper, my trunk gets bigger, my roots go deeper, I'm able to weather a storm. And I'm able to handle a little bit more, and the seedling grows into a little bit more of a tree. I don't have any fruit to bear. A young fruit tree doesn't have fruit, but I'm at least growing into something. Now, a full grown man still can't just come by and yank a 4-foot tall tree out of the ground, but I still didn't have any fruit to bear. Just over time, more things that kept being like undeniable, events in my life, or just these other things, coincidences or whatever, keep happening, that eventually I keep getting stronger and stronger in my faith. And now I start having fruit to bear. Like, I become a tree that's getting a little bit bigger. I can provide shade. I can provide shelter to animals, and I have fruit to bear, which means I can now start sharing that with other people. But now, I know no one can come in and try to make me think that Jesus isn't real anymore. And I went through one of those circumstances where I really leaned in on that. Is Jesus actually real? I've got a cross tattoo on my back. And I wondered at one point, do I need to get a cover-up tattoo? But it's the only tattoo I have. And I was very methodical about getting that. I waited years to get that exact one. But I went through that whole journey of is Jesus actually real? If he is, I need to do some research into this. That way if I'm building my whole life around this faith, that foundation needs to be strong, and I didn't not just believe it because someone told me. And so, as that grows, now that I've had these different experiences and these encounters, then it's I don't care how great the Harvard person is that's arguing against me, and they might be able to give me all sorts of theology that I don't understand, and they might be able to poke holes in this, but my heart is impenetrable there. He's real. He's real. He's who he says he is. And from that standpoint, you can do whatever you want to me, but my stake is driven to the ground. I'm there.
Yeah. It's good, dude. I love that.
But it took time, right? That didn't happen.
Yeah.
That didn't happen right away.
That analogy is fantastic. I'm going to borrow that from time to time.
Go for it.
Yeah. Cause I feel that one of the missions that, and I had those moments, I had that moment exactly that you're talking about. It was almost exactly a year ago, or a year and a month ago, where I had a direct communication, and the mission was basically spread love, and that was the word. Okay. So that's been my mission since, is I just continued to do this. That's all that was very clear. There was no other words other than that feeling. It's continue to spread love. And I was like, oh, wow, that seems really simple, but it's very hard. But anyway, the point is, to your point, the fruit to bear, I'm on that journey. I don't feel I'm ready. This is right now, we're talking between the seedling and the 4-foot trunk, journey for me. But I think that was the main mission. I that's why I questioned earlier about starting a business or starting something. And it's that's the mission. Thank you. And you're wait a minute, maybe it's evolving into other things, right? Something else that's bigger that I don't even know. And I'm so attached to certain things. And maybe that wasn't the thing. Who knows? Only he knows.
Right.
So yeah, dude, I can go so many different places with you. One thing I wanted to share, and then we can get into your business and then sort of the mission that you're on currently. Have you ever heard of I Am Beggar on YouTube? I just want to put that out there for anyone who's hearing this.
I haven't. Can I leave one little note back to where you're at, please, and then come back to that? I am big. When I was 3 months into my new real spiritual walk, submitted, I looked back at how far I'd come in 3 months, and it was kind of mind blowing. When I was 6 months in, I looked back at where I was at from 3 months, and man, I've grown so much. And a year and 2 years, and the growth is just because I'm leaning in and still trying to make this important. I don't do this great at all times by any means. I certainly am still in this world, and I have plenty of in this world things that grab my attention. But the growth is massive. But you would ask me at let's say this year and a month in for you, for me, where I would I wanted to be this massive tree with all this fruits and everything else. And it doesn't need to happen like that, because this life is, you know, we often talk about this life is long and life is short. And you know, there's this piece of that life is absolutely short. And especially in the light of eternity, this life is very, very short. But at the same time, like, you know, for Eric, for you, or for anyone else listening to this, like, the journey is such a beautiful journey that shouldn't be rushed or wished away. Kind of like that Adam Sandler movie where he, you know, fast forwards his, you know, through life, and Click, maybe the name of that movie. You know, but like for our spiritual journey, like, we shouldn't fast forward through this. Like, the next big lesson you have to learn with as a father, as a husband, like, don't wish those away. Enjoy them, because the journey is beautiful. The journey is what draws you closer to God. It's not about this destination. God doesn't need you to save the world. He doesn't need you. He does not need you to bring love to the world. He's already taken care of that. He doesn't need me to bring money to these, you know, organizations. He's got that covered. Like, he wants you in this journey. And so, like, this for any of us, like, if we can just slow down in this, especially this Western, you know, instantaneous, you know, life that we have, like, just slow it down and just be willing to absorb the moment and the patience and the journey. Man, it is so beautiful when we stop and do that. And I have gone through both phases. I have slowed down and just enjoyed it. And I have tried to ramp it up. And when I ramp it up, like, I normally end up having to repeat the lessons, those painful lessons over again, until I finally just stop and, like, all right, God, I'm sorry. You do this. So, sorry, I just That's wanted great. To throw that back to I Am Bigger. But yeah, just don't rush any of this.
Like, it's your journey, and maybe the fruit, you know, will be delicious, or maybe it won't. Maybe it's by the time you get to it, you don't know, right? You can't rush it to be something that you want it to be, when it may not be part of the plan. Thank you for that. Just really quick, if you're hearing this, and I'm mainly for you, Eric, I the letter I and the letter M Beggar on YouTube, he does this amazing job of creating 5 to 10 minute animated videos explaining, and it's less about, it's just the way he communicates the concepts in religion. For anyone who's doubting, for anyone who's trying to do some research, specifically the one where we're like, you know, was Jesus real, or was he a campfire story or a legend, urban legend? He shows you, you know, through animation. He just has a wonderful way of communicating. So I highly recommend checking that out.
I absolutely will. Thank you.
Yeah, let's get into, since we have about 5 minutes left, we can chat about what you're doing, what your current mission is, and all that wonderful stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. I mentioned I started in financial planning, and that has evolved from normal financial planning, like every other wirehouse and financial planning firm does, into getting pretty complex. There was a dangerous dream I had or a dangerous prayer that I had, where I said, God, you give me the steward's heart. I think you do more through me than what you're currently doing. And I'm guessing the limiting factor is probably me, not you. That was dangerous. It led me into starting a hedge fund, which meant I had to leave my previous firm and go independent. Since doing that, now I've launched this hedge fund. We now and the whole, you know, full transparency, the whole purpose behind that is for me to take the money that I make, you know, my portion of that, and to direct that straight to these ministry efforts. And I've got amazing partners there. And then I've got started, you know, I didn't know anything about capital raising. And then someone brought to me an opportunity to help a local business here. Thought he was making some robots in his garage, is what it made it sound like. And the guy needed $20,000. Well, no, the guy needed $20 million. He's got 6,000 robots around the world, and he is on a mission to basically build out the entire ecosystem for commercial robotics. And he's, you know, here we are a year and a half later, and he's doing it. He's got, you know, he's got the app store, and, you know, a bunch of the main competitors are using his apps, and he's got, you know, and he's got this whole fleet of these commercial robots that are, you know, we're in at Mayo now and getting in all these other big places. And so then that led into other capital raising. Now we do a bunch of real estate syndication, which a lot of people do. And so, you know, that's been great for my clients. Now I started to build out this other suite of portfolios where it's like, I don't, like a lot of the financial industry, when I say, you know, a lot of the financial industry, there's a lot of wolves in it, especially the stock market. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, misuse, abuse, inside the stock market. We have very little assets in the stock market. And so a lot into real assets, you know, which are today called alternative investments. Whereas, you know, you go back 75 years and those were the normal thing in stock. Stocks were an alternative investment. And so then we started getting into raising capital for some of these other early stage companies. And now the one that we have, we got a raise that is getting ready to close here on June 30th, which means the funds need to be in by June 28th. So this is a real tight window. But we've got a company who, you got two founders who have had, this is their third biotech company. They've been at this one for a little over 10 years, but they've had two big exits in their first two. And so they're not doing this for money. They've got this company at a very, very low valuation, given how far along they are. But they are taking on the opioid crisis head on. I guess not just head on. They're flanking it because they're going after the existing people who are getting addicted to opioids and are having overdoses. So 110,000 people died in the United States last year from opioid overdose. So it's now the leading cause of death in adults 18 to 45. It's more likely to lead to suicide for like the veteran community, the military veteran community, more likely to lead to suicide than any PTSD. Like it's getting that dramatic now. And so they are going after helping people be able to recover from an overdose or survive an overdose, which is such a major, major issue right now because of these new synthetic opioids. And so fentanyl has changed the game completely. The Narcan and the existing medicines for this, they weren't designed to handle fentanyl. You know, these synthetic opioids can be hundreds of times stronger than prescription opioids. So they've got one that basically is able to handle the fentanyl for 24 hours, unlike Narcan, which might need 6 to 10 doses to handle an overdose right now, and that might last for 2 hours. Then they've got another drug they've got a way that they can cause these pills to expire and lose their efficacy. Whereas right now, an opioid in a bottle has a 70-year half-life. Mm-hmm. So you think about that, like these opioids from World War II still have the potency that they need to be, you know, to be approved today.
Wow.
And so they've got a way to basically cause these to expire at whatever time the doctor prescribes them. So mm-hmm. so many doctors don't prescribe opioids because of this problem. Yeah. And the majority, I don't say it's the majority, but a large percentage of the world does not even use opioids because of how dangerously addictive they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're by far the best pain medication we have, but they're super cheap to make. Mm-hmm. So they're great, except they aren't safe. No improvements to the safety have been made. So they've got another one that causes them to expire. You know, if a prescription's for 14 mm-hmm. days, these things will, you know, basically they'll lose their efficacy in 16 mm-hmm. days. Like you can literally dial it in that much. So that way, when grandma had, you know, surgery on a tooth 3 years ago, you know, little Johnny doesn't get into that medicine cabinet because no one throws away their opioids when they're done. They always save them. And then the biggest one that they have is a way that you literally can't abuse it. And so it has to interact. So they take, it's a delivery agent for the existing opioids. So take hydrocodone, you know, Oxycontin, like any of those generic opioids can now go into, they can go into this delivery agent. And that delivery agent basically allows you to get the therapeutic dosage, 2 pills, and you can get that, but you can't get any more than that. So you can take 20 pills and you still don't get, like you can't overdose on it because it has to, and it's way more complex than we have to do in, the 20 seconds we have left or whatever we have left here. But you have to basically, you can't snort it, smoke it, inject it because it has to interact with your this chemical in your lower intestines, and you can't abuse it. And this doesn't just apply to opioids. It applies to other things that people would abuse, antidepressants. You can even use this to Tylenol to keep a child from overdosing on Tylenol. But yeah, so you've got this company that like they're trying to literally change the world here in such a massive scale. And so that's where I feel like our business is heading.
Yeah.
It's just these more world changing.
Did you want to share the company, the website for that?
Yeah. So the company is Elysium Therapeutics. We can put a link in the chat here for Elysium Therapeutics. We've got $2 million left of the raise that we're trying to do, which is supposed to close here at the end of June. The former director, the FDA director responsible for approving all pain medication, who's seen more applications come through with this than anyone else, he's started out as an advisor, then joined their board, and then became an investor in this as well. And he said, based on where they're at, like the FDA would have intense pressure to basically remove all generic opioids off the shelf if this thing continues where it's at. So they just approved them to start putting 8 opioid, to give administer up to 8 pills with this. So we're hoping to be ready for licensing, start negotiating licensing deals by the end of the year here.
I love it, dude. The website, by the way, for our show notes is elysiumrx.com. So elysiumrx.com. So thanks for sharing that. Two things I want to, before we part, cover, since that is the structure of the show, I don't want to get away from it, even though we spent a lot of time speaking about very important things in terms of embracing the F word. I don't want to forget that very important part of the show. So let's jump into what you experienced in terms of lessons learned through failure.
And I've had many failures. And part of being the man in the ring, not just sitting on silence, but jumping in and being a man in the ring means you're going to, if you play, you don't win all the time. So I have had plenty of failures, but the one that's driven home the latest, big message for me was my identity. And so in the world where I'm in, where I am delivering returns mm-hmm. for people, I want to always deliver positive returns. I want to do this in the name of Christ and represent him well. And I want, if someone trusts me with this and, they understand the risks of every investment we do, but I still want to always deliver positive results. And our hedge fund is in the crypto space, and it has taken a beating, just like everyone, not like everyone else has. We've had some great shining moments. We've survived when many hedge funds in the crypto space have not, but still disappointing from where we were, what we were producing mm-hmm. before. And so that has been a failure for me in a way that has caused me to not have my identity in the approval of other people. It's almost this fear of man type thing mm-hmm. that I had, where it's like, I don't want to disappoint mm-hmm. people. And I just want to always deliver positive, rosy results. I always want to have good news to share with people. And the reality is that I'm not always going to have that. So by me having my identity rooted in Christ allows me to be willing to, I can stand up there and if I need to take a beating, I take a beating. If I need to, just be honest and deliver the not positive news, then I'll just do that, because at the end of the day, I'm just trying to serve Christ, and it's not gonna go according to my plan. My plan would be that everything was up and to the right. I mean, all those people a ton of money, they gave all the money away, they loved and they worshiped Jesus as a result of that. But I think I trust his plan better than mine. Mm.
I love it, dude. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a big one. It's moving away from what other people think, not taking action or step forward because of that fear of like, what will people think, is massive in everything we do. But anyway, thank you for sharing that. The very last bit that I want to share is how you help people in one word.
Stewardship, because money grips people. Money ravages individuals, it ravages marriages, it ravages families. Like money is the most talked about topic in the Bible. Like 2,300 and some verses are revolving around money. You cannot serve God and mammon. There's just so much to understand about money. But when you hand over the keys, what my pastor calls settling the issue of ownership, and that when a steward is responsible for someone else's assets, they don't have their own, they're responsible for someone else's. And so when I help people, these wealthy clients that I work with, and when I help people understand that they are stewards of God's assets, they're not giving a little bit away of their stuff. They're just giving back to God what's his and trying to use his responsibly. It's the way he says it. That is my favorite way to help people. That's the way that I help set people free, at least in the business sense.
I love that. And you work with people that are faith-driven, sort of mission-driven type of people.
That's my intent, but I have some who are not, and that's okay too. But yeah, I mean, I work with wealthy clients. We do a lot of high end tax planning that most most financial advisors won't ever touch because of their compliance department. But we go after really complicated tax planning. So that drives in, obviously, the higher net worth people who have big taxes that they owe. So therefore, we bring more value in that sense. And so a lot of them are faith-driven, but not all.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, dude, thank you for sharing your time with me. It's always just so much value and so much heart. So thank you for showing up and thank you for being you and for being here with me. So what's the best people that people can reach out to you? Well, number one, I'm going to share for you really quickly. Listen to his podcast. You're listening to this. His show is called Wealth Well Done. So you can find that on all your podcast platforms and YouTube as well. So Wealth Well Done. Fabulous job there, brother. Congratulations. But yeah, how
it's all thanks to you guys.
People watch you and learn a little more? Or listen?
Yeah. Yeah. So Wealth Well Done. Done by Air Brands or Honor Brands, excuse me. And man, that's been so phenomenal. If you're thinking about doing a podcast, I just handed the keys over to Eric and his team. And it's been such an enjoyable experience. So I wanted nothing to do with this and they have made it something that I was telling him before the show, like, I want to keep leaning more because I love the feedback that I'm getting from it. Our business is Storehouse Wealth Management. The website is storehouseassets.com. If someone wanted to understand more about Elysium or how they could invest into that or other opportunities like that, you can just get a hold of me very easily through storehouseassets.com. And yeah, outside of that, I mean, the Wealth Well Done podcast is tactical, practical, and spiritual advice.
I love it.
Those are my three pillars that Eric encouraged me to have.
So. Love it, dude. Yeah. Great job on the show,
thank
man.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate you, brother.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate you too, man.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.